You're 1 week away from WrestleMania 28 in Miami, Florida. This is the Solid Monster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com, episode 211 for Sunday, March 25th, 2012. I am the Solid Monster. Got some things to cover here this week. We'll talk about Raw from last Monday night, Yokozuna, the latest inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame, and FCW. That was kind of a big story this week. We'll talk about that as well. Also, those of you on my Facebook page may have seen my post a couple of days ago. I teased I would have an announcement to make concerning the next show, and I'll have a little announcement for you guys a little bit later on the show this week. You'll want to stick around for that. But first, let's jump right into Raw from last Monday night. Not the go-home show, I guess. It was the go-home show to the go-home show, if you will. Raw from Philadelphia. We were 2 weeks out from WrestleMania, and another good show. They're pretty much churning out good shows week after week. Some are better than others. I thought this week was a bit of a step back from the last couple of weeks, but still a good show all the same. We had CM Punk and Chris Jericho advancing their feud nicely. We had the first time since Survivor Series that we've seen The Rock get physical on TV. We saw the first promo for the returning Matt Bloom, who will be debuting as Lord Tensai. At least I hope I'm pronouncing that right. He'll be debuting sometime after WrestleMania, apparently. And Shane Douglas made an ass out of himself. So a pretty eventful show for Monday night. Now, on the flip side, after returning on last week's show, we had the Funkasaurus once again MIA. He was nowhere to be found. And also, the main event segment this week was yet more talking, which I'm not necessarily a fan of. See, sometimes you can have that in the main event, but it feels like we're having... I can't even think of the last time we had a match in the Raw main event. So that was a no-no. But let's break this show down here. The show started with the WWE champion, CM Punk. Frankly, looking back, I think this segment probably should have ended the show on Monday night. I mean, if you're going to have talking as your main event yet again, you've already headlined Raw after Raw after Raw with John Cena and The Rock. You know, instead of having Undertaker and Shawn Michaels and Triple H out there pretty much repeating what they've already said, why not give the WWE title match some airtime in the main event slot here? But anyway, Punk comes out for a promo, talks about his father being an alcoholic. That's no big secret. He said it's not Chris Jericho's story to tell. He was not happy at all that Jericho brought all this up. And Punk said that his dad has since overcome his addiction to alcohol. He was very proud of him. He talked about being straight edge. He showed a lot of passion here in this promo, talking about his straight edge beliefs. And you know, obviously, when you bring personal stuff like someone's family into a feud, it usually touches a nerve. And it certainly touched a nerve with Punk. Jericho popped up on the Titantron via satellite. I don't see anybody complaining about Jericho being via satellite, even though via satellite, I'm sure, was kind of code for him doing this promo in the broom closet backstage. He was all serious, totally out of character. He said this is not Y2J talking with the fancy jacket and the bravado and all that. This was just Chris appearing to be sincere, even though I think anybody with half a brain could have seen where this was going. And he apologized for bringing up Punk's father, said he would never do it again, but he said that does not mean he can't go after Punk's sister, which he did. He called CM Punk's sister a drug addict, said that there is a pattern of behavior in his family. And Jericho vowed to become the WWE champion at WrestleMania, which, after all, is the goal here. And Punk was none too happy about this. Cussed out Jericho, which got bleeped on TV, so it was a little bit difficult to see what he was saying, but obviously he was a bit of a potty mouth here in this segment, which was nice. I mean, again, if somebody brought up the fact that my sister, if I had a sister, was a drug addict, whether it was true or not, I'd also be pissed off. So I think Punk had the appropriate reaction. I thought this was a fine segment, but again, perhaps they could have saved this for the end of the show. Kane beat the Big Show in a short match. Cody Rhodes was at ringside, tried to interfere, provided the distraction that Kane needed to chokeslam Big Show off the second rope. 1-2-3, match over. Now, after the match, Cody handcuffed Big Show to the ropes, beat the piss out of him with a pair of boxing gloves. I mean, boy, he was laying in those shots like I felt bad for the Big Show. It was actually uncomfortable to watch. You know, there's a reason that you find more pro boxers with brain damage than MMA fighters. It's those damn gloves. It was also during this match that Shane Douglas, that's right, the franchise, Shane Douglas tried to cause a commotion and get the crowd to chant ECW, which failed miserably. So miserably, in fact, that I completely missed it at first, even though it happened right in front of the hard camera. I saw people posting on Twitter and Facebook, oh, did you see Shane Douglas? I had no idea what these people were talking about. I had to go back and watch it. And it was also such a miserable failure that even WWE apparently didn't know what was going on until they read about it on the internet. So think about that. You have Kevin Dunn in the truck, all these people watching on monitors. Even they couldn't tell that Shane Douglas was in the crowd doing what he was doing. Basically, he was in the crowd with a bunch of people, and he was wearing a lucha mask. I believe he was wearing a white button-down shirt, and at a determined time, he tore off the shirt and ripped off the mask to reveal himself to the world, or to the six people sitting around him in the vicinity. And he was apparently trying to promote his ECW reunion show in Philadelphia, which takes place next month, I believe on April 28th, if I'm not mistaken. So, hey! The date is out there. I just mentioned the date of his show on my podcast. So obviously he got some people to talk about it, which was probably the goal, although I don't know that he figured it was going to flop quite as much as it did. He was, you know, promoting a show that it just makes me wonder how many ECW reunion shows can we possibly have? My God, it seems like there's a new one every 3 months. So anyway, I guess on some level this worked. You know, there's more people now who are aware of his show than there were a week and a half ago, but they're also now aware of the sad sack that is Shane Douglas. So congrats to him. You know, if this was a TNA star doing something like this, teasing almost like an invasion, I would at least say, okay, that's at least interesting. That's maybe even kind of cool. You know, if TNA sent Samoa Joe and Magnus in disguises to sit in the audience and then, you know, they ripped off a mask or something and drew, you know, this big reaction from people in the audience who actually recognize who they are and maybe even got people to chant TNA or you know, Joe's going to kill you or something like that. But this was just, you know, what does this really accomplish? By the way, speaking of ECW, did you happen to see that video that popped up online last week from the indie show a couple weeks ago with Balls Mahoney against Marty Jannetty? What a combination that is. Marty's actually been on his best behavior. I haven't heard too many stories about him over the last few months. But did you see Balls Mahoney in this video? Oh, my God. I seriously had to look away each time he started vomiting. My gag reflex was kicking in. You know, that's what hardcore will do to you. Actually, that's probably what meth and booze will do to you, but hardcore, too. So, anyway, Shane Douglas is doing his ECW reunion show. I guess if you're in the Philadelphia area next month or you were a fan of the old ECW and want to see some of the old faces, by all means, go ahead. I don't even think Tommy Dreamer has anything to do with this because he made the comment a few years back that he was not doing any more of these shows. I think it was after the one TNA did, the Hardcore Justice one. You just get to a point where it's like, let it go. Enough already. And you watch somebody like Balls Mahoney in that video, and that's not to say that all of the former ECW alum turned out like Balls Mahoney. But you could certainly point to certain people like Balls or the Sandman who have had some public issues in recent years. They've run into some you know, well-known issues, be it with alcohol or drugs or what have you. And you just look at Balls Mahoney in that video, you know, begging Marty Jannetty to whack him in the head. Just whack him in the skull head-on with an unprotected chair shot. And then he just starts vomiting all over the place. And I think the indie that that match took place on, I don't know if that was Pro Wrestling Syndicate or not, but it looks like now they're turning it into an angle because I think on the next show they're promoting that Balls Mahoney will be back with an explanation as to why he you know, was behaving the way that he was behaving, and this didn't look like an angle to me. This just looks sad, but, you know, whatever. It is what it is. We had a match where David Otunga beat Santino Marella. The beginning part of this match, which maybe went 2 minutes if that, was a pose-off between Santino and Otunga, and Santino actually had abs. I will admit that the first 3 seconds when I looked at Santino with those abs painted onto his midsection, I thought it was legit, and I thought to myself, wow, this guy's been hitting the weights or, you know, the crunches or whatever, and then I realized, wait a minute, it doesn't look right. So he painted abs on. Actually, that wouldn't be a bad idea for me when I go down to Miami next week. I might have to borrow that idea. So that was the comedy at the beginning of the match, and it was Santino, and he does this very well. So it was actually fine. I was entertained by it. And in the end, Otunga nails Santino with a spine buster after a distraction from John Laurinaitis, who is, I guess, now the de facto manager for David Otunga. And after the match, Laurinaitis was mocking Teddy Long, and he was actually doing Santino's trombone, I believe Johnny Ace was. So this was very entertaining. Teddy Long was out there. He slapped Laurinaitis and then ran away, which I thought was kind of odd, that the babyface would run, of all people, run away from Johnny Ace. But he probably a smart thing for Teddy Long to do. He is actually an older man and probably isn't the athlete that Laurinaitis was or is or whatever. So he ran away with Santino, and they were both dancing, if you could call it that, on top of the stage. Like I said, I'm actually digging this whole GM versus GM storyline. The only part about it I haven't liked is when it overshadows some of the matches, you know. And in some cases, we had a match that had, I think had both world champions in it. In fact, it was a CM Punk against Daniel Bryan match a couple weeks ago where the two GMs were on commentary and they were just screaming and hollering at each other, and the announcers could talk about nothing but the angle. Meanwhile, you've got two world champions in there. So that kind of stuff pisses me off, but the angle itself seems to be over. People are into it. Again, it's a way other than a battle royal to get a bunch of guys on the WrestleMania card and actually in a match that has some meaning. I mean, we all know that, you know, the draft or who's on what brand and GMs, it's all bullshit. I mean, really, does anybody think this is really that important? It really isn't. But at least there's something that they're fighting for. You know, there's something at stake. As long as it's not a bait and switch where, you know, both men end up staying with their respective brands, because, I mean, that would essentially render the WrestleMania match useless. I haven't heard one way or the other whether or not they are removing Teddy Long from TV. I am of the impression that Laurinaitis is not going anywhere, but that doesn't mean that he has to be a GM. I mean, like I said, Laurinaitis has almost been a manager for David Otunga the last couple weeks. Maybe he loses, or his team loses at WrestleMania, so Teddy Long can stick around, but they find some other role for John Laurinaitis. He might even excel in a role like that, kind of like Michael Cole. You know, Michael Cole at his most heelish probably would have made for a great manager for somebody like The Miz or some other heel in the company. Hell of a lot better than he would as an announcer, but they never went in that direction. So I actually like this storyline. I was entertained by this. After the match, we had that vignette for the returning A-Train, who is coming in with the name Lord Tensai. We didn't actually see his face. We saw a bunch of tattoos. It was a bunch of, I think, Japanese characters that they put up on the screen. I will admit, for a fleeting moment, I thought perhaps they were bringing back Kenzo Suzuki, which would have been an awful idea. What put it over the top for me and what convinced me that it was A-Train before I read anything about this online, and even in my Twitter feed, I think within a minute of it ending, I even made a comment that that was A-Train, and I knew. And how did I know? The minute they showed the back of this guy's head, I knew. He has the most gargantuan melon on top of those shoulders I have ever seen in my life. And it brought me back to the days when he was in the WWF, and Jim Ross would always refer to the size of his head. Jim Ross had this uncanny ability to know the boot size of the Big Show and to know the head size of A-Train. He never talked about anybody's dick size, thank God. That would be awkward. But he did talk about the fact that, you know, Albert had a head that was about 8 3/8. He used to call them all 8 3/8. So I've never forgotten that. And as soon as I saw the back of this guy's head, I thought, hey, that's an 8 3/8 head right there. That's got to be only one person. So he has been working in Japan for quite some time as Giant Bernard. He was actually part of a tag team, I think, with a wrestler by the name of Carl Anderson. And he's been over there now for a number of years. And I've seen some of his work, some of his matches on YouTube. He's a big guy worker. He's not flying around the ring like a luchador. He's also not a young man anymore, you know, relatively speaking. I mean, in life, he's certainly a young guy, but in the wrestling world, he's 39 years old. He's pretty much reaching probably the end part of his career, at least in terms of, you know, being in a position, I think, to really have one last big run. This is probably it for him. And he supposedly is having a kid or just had a kid, and is looking to transition into a more normal schedule instead of going over to Japan for the different tours and all of that kind of stuff. So he denied it on Twitter when the news first came out. That was obviously because, you know, WWE just didn't want it to get out, so it's not like he could come out. See, in a situation like that, I'm always of the opinion that if news happens to leak that the company does not want people to know about, I would much rather just keep my mouth shut and maintain Twitter silence than actually go out and say, no, it's all a lie. And then within a week, it's confirmed that, no, it's actually the truth. I mean, do you really have to go online and just lie about it? I mean, if the news is out there and you don't want to validate it, you can either just completely ignore it and just continue posting and not make reference to it, or just maintain silence and don't say a word. But anyway, so he's coming in. When, we don't know. Obviously, it'll be after WrestleMania. I guess it could be at WrestleMania even. You know, there were some rumors that they might bring him in a prominent role as maybe some sort of henchman or bodyguard for John Laurinaitis, which, again, if that's the case, it's almost a tip-off as to who might win that GM match at WrestleMania. But if he comes in a role like that, possibly feuding him with somebody like John Cena, who is the man without a feud coming out of WrestleMania, you know, The Rock is not going to be around. Even if they wanted to do a rematch with Cena and Rock at SummerSlam or WrestleMania next year, Cena has no apparent feud immediately coming out of WrestleMania, so it would almost make sense to pair him off maybe with somebody like A-Train. So I guess we'll see what they decide to do with him. I like this whole idea of bringing new people in with vignettes. It's something we've seen them do with other people in recent years. I think at the Triple H edict, and we're going to talk about developmental in a little bit. So this was well done, and I think it'll be nice to have some fresh blood. I was never a big fan of A-Train when he was in WWE, I will admit. But I have respect for the guy. Goes over to Japan, gets better, you know, makes an even bigger name for himself. Now he's coming back at a time when there aren't that many big guys on the WWE roster. You know, you've got The Undertaker, who wrestles one match each year. You've got Kane. You've got The Big Show. You've got Kali, who also doesn't necessarily appear all the time, thank God. But you don't really have too many big guys, and he's a legitimate big guy. I think he's 6'8", close to 300 pounds. He can work. He cuts a good promo. So, I look forward to having the guy back. I have no problem with that. They had a segment here that was taped earlier in the day, in the evening. Rock was in front of the Rocky statue, appropriately enough, in Philadelphia. Showed a picture of himself when he was a 12-year-old boy, posing in front of that same statue. Talked about people like Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior, men that he watched and idolized when he was a kid. Mentioned Macho Man Randy Savage as well, without actually saying Savage's name. He did the "Ooh yeah" impersonation, which I always love. I'm sure that makes Vince McMahon's heart flutter. And he basically talked about, you know, the significance of Philadelphia, being in the WrestleMania main event there in 99, losing to Stone Cold Steve Austin. And he said that to realize his dream of being the greatest of all time, he had to beat John Cena at WrestleMania. He just had to. And he said he would send a message to Cena later on. He would be in the building. And then he left. And people were excited because they knew he was actually going to be in the arena, and not just via satellite, like Chris Jericho was. The interesting thing about Rock, which I haven't heard him mention, I think it would be a good thing for him to, a good line to include in a promo, which would really illustrate the significance of this match to him. The Rock is the only man in WWE history to have victories at WrestleMania over both Hulk Hogan and Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's a pretty big deal right there. Hogan and Austin, you know, Rock aside, Hogan and Austin are two of the biggest stars in the history, not only of that company, but of wrestling in this country anyway, in general. I mean, there are really no bigger names than Hogan, Rock, and Austin. And we never got that Hogan-Austin match, of course, but to think that Rock is the only guy to have pinfall wins over both of these guys, two guys that did not job very often at WrestleMania, and in Hogan's case, job very much at all. In fact, I'm trying to think of another WrestleMania where Austin lost a match via pinfall. I don't think he ever did. I mean, his first Mania, he beat Savio Vega. 13, he didn't even submit. He passed out in a match against Bret Hart. He won the title from Michaels in 98. He won the title from Rock in 99. He missed 2000 with an injury. He beat Rock again in 2001. He beat Scott Hall in 2002. And then his last match, he lost to The Rock. So that's a very big deal, and I haven't seen them mention that on TV. I think that'd be a good line. If Rock got serious, let's say, on the Go Home show, his final promo, if they have some sort of face-to-face, or if they had balls, they put these two guys in the ring for a Piper's Pit, which Roddy Piper has been begging for this for months. And I actually first floated the idea of doing a Piper's Pit with Rock and Cena before SummerSlam last year. If you go back and listen to some of those old sound-offs, I thought that if they could get Rock to participate in SummerSlam, obviously he wasn't going to wrestle a match, but a smart way to get both these guys, Rock in particular, on pay-per-view, maybe boost the buy rate, was promote a Piper's Pit. Don't do it on free TV. Promote Piper's Pit with Rock and Cena for SummerSlam, but they never did it. But whatever they have planned for the Go Home show this week, again, Rock should get serious like he did a couple of weeks ago when he said, you know, you strip away all the layers and I'm going to rip your throat out and all that, and just get up in Cena's face and quite simply say something to the effect of, you're looking at a guy, the only guy in history to have beaten Hulk Hogan and Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania. What makes you think that you're better than those guys? What makes you think that you can beat me? That's a money line right there. So I was just, you know, I'm listening to Rock rattle off all these names of legends and stuff, and it just hit me what a big deal that was, and I can't remember him mentioning that in a promo. Daniel Bryan beat Zack Ryder, another quick, that was the theme of the night here. These matches did not, you know, if you blinked, you missed most of these matches on this show. They showed a video before the match. Zack Ryder was campaigning. He was lobbying for a spot on Team Teddy in that 12-man match at WrestleMania, which I believe he's now been officially added to that match. And, it, you know, he's in the parking lot. He's got a lot of fans around him that kind of made Zack Ryder seem like a big deal. And then he comes out, and he just looks like a total jobber in this match against Daniel Bryan, which is a great, I think, a great example of why they should probably bring jobbers back, quite frankly. You know, pay some local guys to get their asses kicked in the ring like they used to do back in the day. I know why they don't do it, because it doesn't draw ratings, but Zack Ryder got embarrassed here. Got tapped out, in fact, to the LaBelle Lock, and that was it. They made an announcement that Flo Rida would be performing Rock's entrance at WrestleMania. I think they said he would be performing Rock's entrance at WrestleMania. The thing about this is they put a press release out this week announcing that Flo Rida and, I guess, Machine Gun Kelly is the name of the other guy, are both going to be performing at WrestleMania, but I don't believe they made any reference in the press release to them performing songs for Rock or Cena. Or at least I should say performing their entrances. I had been of the impression that these guys were going to actually play their music while Rock and Cena came to the ring, so we might not get Rock and Cena coming down to their usual entrance music, but I don't think in the press release it mentioned that at all. So I think these guys are just going to be performing their songs, and Rock and Cena, I'm sure they'll both have elaborate entrances, but they probably will just be coming down to the ring to their regular theme music. But anyway, those are the musical acts for WrestleMania this year. And I guess, listen, if you're going to be in Florida for WrestleMania to have a guy whose name is Flo Rida, I guess that makes sense. John Cena and Mark Henry had a match. It was for the two people, perhaps, in the world who didn't hear. John Cena was in an automobile accident, not a very serious one. It could have been a lot worse. TMZ covered the whole thing. This was earlier in the day on Monday. And he was a little banged up at most. You know, I think a car actually got hit, and that car then got rammed into the back of Cena's vehicle. But can you imagine what was going through the minds of Vince McMahon and the executives in WWE when they first heard or got the phone call that, hey, Cena was in a car accident? Probably passed out on the floor. They had to run and get the smelling salts just to wake him up. It could have been a lot worse. Let's just put it that way. It could have been a lot worse. I'm not even sure what WWE would have done. I mean, if God forbid Cena was in a car accident and both arms and both legs were broken and there was absolutely no way he could wrestle at WrestleMania, what do you do in a situation like that? I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, the one guy on the roster who really doesn't have a match, who at least was at one point a main eventer, I mean, hell, he was your defending champion last year and right now isn't even on the show, is Miz. And I would almost think that you would have to just take Miz and put Miz in Cena's spot and have a Rock-Miz main event at WrestleMania, which would be an awful idea. So I don't really know what you would do in a case like that. It's too late, I would think, to try to convince, you know, a Steve Austin or somebody like that to come out of retirement, or Shawn Michaels, who has a role and is adamant that he's not wrestling again. So thankfully Cena is okay. but they played up the whole car accident thing. He basically got his ass kicked by Mark Henry in this match, which I thought was great. Mark Henry looked like a real badass for the first time in months in this match. And then Cena, the classic babyface that he is, made his comeback and hoisted Mark Henry up on his shoulders. And I saw where everybody was making a big deal about it. Look, it's very impressive that Cena can get somebody who's 400 pounds or close to 400 pounds up on his shoulders. I certainly couldn't do that. It's very impressive, especially a guy who might have legitimately been banged up after a car accident. But I've seen so many different feats of strength from Cena. He's done this before. It's to me, you know, he's gotten the Big Show. He's gotten the Great Khali up on his shoulders. So this wasn't as impressive to me, I guess, as it was to other people, because I've already seen it. But he delivered the attitude adjustment, which looked rough on Henry. It almost looked like he landed on his head. And got the pinfall. So John Cena wins. Rock comes out after the match. Comes down to the ring. He is teasing that he's going to beat John Cena's ass, but of course it's Swerve. And instead he delivers a rock bottom to an unsuspecting Mark Henry, who got some height on that rock bottom, too. It's not just the rock. You know, it takes two to tango when you do a move like that. And Mark Henry is not exactly known for his vertical leap, but he got some height on that rock bottom. If anything, the rock bottom almost looked more impressive to me than the FU. And Rock left. That was it. So pretty nasty thing, I think, for The Rock to do to one of his former compadres in the old Nation of Domination. Remember that? Rock and Mark Henry used to be partners. So that was that. They showed something on TV that apparently I missed. It was an angle that they shot to set up the Divas tag match at WrestleMania with Maria Menounos. I missed it. I went to go... what did I do? I think I went to go grab something from the fridge. I came back, and it was over. So that was that. Then The Miz came out. I mentioned Miz a moment ago, a man without a match at WrestleMania, although he will have some role at the pay-per-view. They have something planned for him. I pray it is not interference in the main event, and if it is, that it doesn't impact the finish. I don't think it would impact the finish, although I would not put it past them to have Miz interfere in the Rock Cena match in some way. But he comes out, cuts a promo, and this annoyed me. It's a minor thing, I admit. I'm not trying to pick on the guy, but I get very irritated. Whenever I, for example, read a newspaper article about wrestling that a mainstream media source will do. So like right now, for example, WWE is getting a lot of publicity for WrestleMania. They just got an Associated Press story. That's a big deal. And a lot of times when these people do these articles, they get their facts wrong. So if they're referencing WrestleMania, I've seen it countless times where they'll talk about how Hulk Hogan hoisted up Andre the Giant to slam him down at WrestleMania 8 in Indianapolis. And it just bugs the shit out of me when I see stuff like that. And you would think a guy like Miz, who works for WWE and is a legitimate wrestling fan, would know better. But he comes out, and the point he was trying to make basically was that he's a man who was not only at WrestleMania last year, but he was in the main event. He won. He retained his championship in the main event of WrestleMania. And from one year to the next, he is in jeopardy of not having a match at all and being completely left off the card. Quite a descent. And he was trying to illustrate this point and where it ranks in the annals of history by bringing up King Kong Bundy and how King Kong Bundy went from the main event of WrestleMania 2 in 1987 to wrestling midgets at WrestleMania 3. And it just annoyed me. Again, not a big deal, but obviously WrestleMania 2 was 1986, and 87 is well known for WrestleMania 3 because of Hogan Andre. I mean, how do you get something like that wrong? So it just pissed me off. Another reason to hate The Miz. He has his facts wrong. He needs to come talk to me. So, you know, he's trying to make the point that King Kong Bundy went from wrestling for the WWF Championship to wrestling midgets, which is a good point, but at the same time, it's nothing compared to this, because King Kong Bundy slamming Little Beaver and dropping an elbow on him at WrestleMania 3 is actually one of the more well-known moments of WrestleMania history. You know, it's been replayed a dozen times, at least. It is a well-known moment in the history of that show. And The Miz, I'm not so sure that The Miz has had any sort of WrestleMania moment like that people are going to remember 20 years from now, like they remember Bundy slamming poor Little Beaver down. I actually chuckle every time I think about that. King Kong Bundy, when he found out that Miz made a remark about him on the show, and I'm not even sure he actually saw the show, but he actually tore into the Miz on Twitter, if that's the real Bundy's account. I don't even know if it is, but I've always been a King Kong Bundy fan. Anybody who knows me, who has had wrestling conversations with me, I've probably brought it up to them. I've talked about this actually recently with my brother. You know, they're doing this new network. They're trying to come up with concepts for shows and stuff like that, and they're working with different legends. King Kong Bundy, for those of you who are unaware, is actually now a stand-up comedian. I don't think he does it full-time or anything, but he has done quite a few stand-up comedy shows in recent years. I have not had the pleasure of seeing a King Kong Bundy stand-up show. I've always wanted to. I just have not been able to. And I always liked Bundy. There was something about Bundy I liked. He was a shitty-ass wrestler. I mean, my God, he came back in 95. He just looked like Humpty Dumpty, you know? Bundy always looked to me like a giant egg. He looked like an egg. But I like Bundy because if you ever heard a King Kong Bundy promo, he was actually pretty damn good. The guy can talk the talk. And I remember back in the day when he was feuding with Hulk Hogan, and that WrestleMania 2 main event was him and Hogan in a cage, in fact. And he was the latest kind of big, heavy guy they were bringing in to feud with Hogan. And Bundy talked about ending Hulkamania and how Bundamania was running wild. And every time I just hear that word, Bundamania, I just crack up laughing. And the gimmick with Bundy, of course, was the 5 count. Because whenever he would go to pin somebody, getting the 3 count was not enough. He would yell at the referee and tell the referee, "You count to 5." And the referee would have to count 5, and then the match would be over. And he did that gimmick again, I think, actually, when he came back in the mid-90s. So I always thought that there was room for King Kong Bundy on a show like Raw. Maybe not every week, but if you wanted to do some segment or bring in legends and people from the past and all that, why not have some sort of interview segment called The 5 Count with King Kong Bundy? You know, he can come out and, you know, Bundy will give you the 5 reasons that this guy, you know, is going to win at the next pay-per-view, or, you know, the 5 guys, the 5 best guys on Raw, whatever the case may be. But basically, it would be like an interview segment. You know, Bundy has personality. He's a funny guy. He's a legend from the past. He should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, if you main event at WrestleMania, and your name wasn't Lawrence Taylor, all due respect to him, but if you were a wrestler who headlined WrestleMania, you know, and he had a nice run for himself, I think, in World Class as well in the 80s, I mean, Bundy should be in the Hall of Fame. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that. Miz had a match with Sheamus. Sheamus kicked his ass, beat him, so Miz loses yet again on Raw, but it's all part of whatever angle or storyline they've got with The Miz. He will be at WrestleMania in some form or fashion. I think on his Twitter he said that he would, do something on Raw this Monday night. There's 1 week left, I guess, for him to officially get on the card in some capacity, so we'll find out what they have planned for him. Randy Orton was interviewed after this on the Old School platform. This is also something I loved, speaking of old school. Back in Bundy's day, for example, WWF used to have an interview stage that was set up not anywhere near the ring. It was kind of, you would come through the entranceway and it would be in that area over there, kind of where the announcers were sitting back in the early 2000s. You know, WWE, I should say, went through this period where they had Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler sitting away from ringside, which I hated. But that's where the interview platform used to be, and Mean Gene Okerlund would be up on there, and he would bring somebody out. They would cut a promo, whatever. And they brought it back a couple of times in recent years. They actually had it on the Old School Raw that they did back in 2010. And they brought it back here. Josh Matthews was on the platform, brought out Randy Orton. And Randy Orton had nothing to say. I mean, Randy Orton, God bless Randy Orton. He's got great matches and everything. But Randy Orton is perhaps the most boring promo of any main event guy that I've seen in WWE in years. He just has nothing to say. He's so wooden. He's like a robot. He really is. He's like a robot. Robo Randy. And he comes out, he talks about, you know, Kane. He beat the monster last summer so badly that Kane shook his hand and was humanized. And Orton said Kane's humanity is gone. And this was so stupid. It's not entirely Randy Orton's fault. It's the material. I mean, he's in a feud with Kane. They give Kane such corny, corny lines to recite. Again, I mentioned it last week, you know, when they had Kane on SmackDown giving the explanation for why he attacked Orton. I saw people on my Facebook page being like, wow, this is great. You know, they actually gave meaning to this feud. I actually thought this was an awesome segment, and all I could sit there and think was, my God, were you watching the same thing that I was watching? It was awful. It was terrible. It was so hokey. It was so crappy. My idea for why Kane started attacking people like Cena and Orton is a much better idea than what WWE went with, in my opinion. I mean, these guys had a match last summer, and Orton beat Kane. Okay, you want to use that, that's fine, but why did Kane come back wearing a mask? Number one, they never explained that. Why did he come back wearing a mask and go after John Cena if he's had this festering feeling in the pit of his stomach for months and months to go after Randy Orton? Why'd he go after John Cena? Doesn't make any sense. The last time we saw Kane, I think he was a SmackDown guy. He came back on Raw specifically to go after John Cena. It doesn't make any sense. It's stupid. My idea was to bring Kane back, and, you know, with the pretense that he's got this issue with the pretty boys of WWE. You know, he was out for a couple of months, realized he was going soft, and he's sick and tired of looking on TV and seeing these pretty boys like John Cena and Randy Orton. That at least would explain to you why the mask is back. It's not enough just to say that, you know, Kane wanted to go back and be mean like he used to be, and therefore the mask has some special power, I guess, that makes him evil. No, he just, the mask represents something. It's a vanity thing. And that's why he went after John Cena, and now he's going after Randy Orton. Now, who he goes after when he's done with Orton, I have no idea. But anyway, this is stupid. The whole basis of this feud is stupid. They had to get these two guys on WrestleMania in some way. And whenever I hear Orton talk or Kane talk about this feud, I have absolutely no interest in this whatsoever because the dialogue is so terrible. It's just, he has nothing to say. So this was a complete waste of a segment. After this, we had Jack Swagger and Dolph Ziggler in a tag team match against R-Truth and Kofi Kingston. Four people in the 12-man Teddy versus Johnny tag. They're calling it Team Teddy and Team Johnny, which I think is funny. These four men are officially in that match. I think Swagger and Ziggler on the show were officially announced as being part of the match. And we had Vicky Guerrero was outside the ring. R-Truth had gotten his foot on the ropes after Dolph Ziggler nailed him with a Famouser. And Vicky Guerrero shoved the foot off the ropes. Referee didn't see it, so that was that. Swagger and Ziggler win the match. Oksana was out there. Her and Vicky went at it in a catfight when the match was over. And that was pretty much it. We had some footage from a house show, Madison Square Garden. They were here in New York last week, and they showed footage of Triple H, who was on the card, hitting the Tombstone Piledriver on poor Dolph Ziggler. And I actually like this a lot. This is something they need to do more of. Not just because it was Madison Square Garden. That's not enough. They need to do more angles that take place on house shows. And show footage of that on television. You're not going to do that all the time. You don't do that every week. You don't do that every other week. You don't even do that every month. But the fact that they did this here was, I thought, a really cool thing because it actually shows people who may not really give it much of a thought. There is a world outside of what you see on TV. You might want to pay a ticket to go see WWE when they come to town because you never know what you're going to see or who you're going to see. You know, Triple H doesn't do very many house shows. But he did this one, and he actually nailed Dolph Ziggler with the Tombstone Piledriver. And that's a cool thing. So I want to see them show more footage from house shows. They used to do that back in the day. They don't do that so much now. So I thought this was actually really cool. Main event segment had Shawn Michaels, Triple H, and The Undertaker. Michaels came out first, said that people were pestering him for his prediction on what would happen at WrestleMania. He said they would have to wait until after the show. It's not much of a way to make a prediction there. That would be like me going on the Sound Off the week after WrestleMania to give my predictions. Wouldn't make any sense. So he said that people were asking him, you know, they were questioning his ability to remain impartial in this match, being that him and Triple H are best buds. And he said the end of an era basically is the end of the streak because The Undertaker has been badly savaged. That's my word, not his. Over the last couple of years, Undertaker came out wearing the hood, so we still don't know what he looks like underneath. I know there's been some photos that have leaked online, presumably recent photos of The Undertaker, that actually don't look so bad. He does look a little bit old. There's one photo of him and Michelle McCool posing with somebody who I don't know. I don't know who the person is. And Undertaker looks like a grandfather in this picture. But otherwise, I think the guy looks fine. I think at WrestleMania, is he going to be bald? Is he going to have hair? He'll have some hair. It won't be long hair. And it's not going to be a big deal. You know, 2 minutes later, people are going to ignore it, and he's going to go on and have a great match. So Undertaker comes out, and he reiterates to Shawn Michaels what he had said the previous week on Raw, that this match between himself and Triple H at WrestleMania must remain pure. That's the word he used, pure. I laugh when I hear that. I've never heard a match referred to that way before. The match has to remain pure, he says. That could be taken so many different ways. He said that before Triple H and Shawn Michaels begin conspiring, you know, I think around this point Triple H came out. He was basically teasing perhaps there's some sort of pact between Michaels and Triple H to screw The Undertaker at WrestleMania. Triple H came out, was not wearing a suit, actually. He looked good. He was wearing a t-shirt, which looks more normal for him. And he came out, and he actually started, in a way, he kind of started berating Shawn Michaels and said that as much as Shawn's ego wants this to be about him, be about him, it's not about him, it's about Undertaker and Triple H. And Triple H said that there have been 24, actually, this is what Triple H said. He said there have only been 24 Hell in a Cell matches, and Undertaker and Triple H each have been part of 19 of those Hell in a Cell matches. Only 24? Wow, like that's such a small number there. Only 24. 24 Hell in a Cell matches, even since 1997, is overkill. Are you kidding me? There shouldn't have been more than 10 to 12 at the most in that period of time. Hell in a Cell is something, you know, in those first 2 years, actually, in those first 3 years, you had three Hell in a Cells. You had the one in 97, you had the King of the Ring one, which will live on in infamy, with Mankind and The Undertaker. The next year, you had that abomination at WrestleMania, which was Big Boss Man and Undertaker. And I think the one after that was probably in 2000. That was the six-man one where Rikishi got thrown off the cage. So in the first 4 years, I'm sorry, one, two, three, let's say in the first 4 years you had four Hell in a Cell matches. At that point, being that those were already done, what WWE should have done is said, listen, if we're going to do Hell in a Cell in the future, we need to save Hell in a Cell for the culmination of a blood feud between two people. Just save it for a special occasion when there's this rivalry in the company that can only be ended inside the dreaded, deadly Hell in a Cell where bodies have been battered and mangled. I mean, I remember they had a Hell in a Cell match when Triple H came back from his quad tear as a babyface in 2002, won the title at WrestleMania, lost it to Hogan, and then he feuded with Chris Jericho. And at the Judgment Day show, they had a Hell in a Cell match with Chris Jericho and The Undertaker. I'm sorry, with Chris Jericho and Triple H. Now, I get that they wanted to do a gimmick match because Jericho and Triple H had feuded at WrestleMania, and then the feud kind of took a back seat when he defended the title and lost to Hulk Hogan, and then they revisited it. So you do a gimmick match. You already did the straight singles match, now you do a gimmick match. And I always said there was no reason for Triple H and Chris Jericho to have a Hell in a Cell match that year, especially if Triple H was just going to beat Jericho again. It's kind of like the Austin Rock dynamic. I can only think of maybe one match on SmackDown ever where Jericho got a win over Triple H. And maybe I might even be misremembering that. I think the first match they ever had was at Fully Loaded in... The first match they ever had was that Raw match where Jericho seemingly won the title. That was in State College, Pennsylvania. That was one of the best moments in Raw history. When they did that phantom title win with Chris Jericho, but it didn't count because they came back from commercial and they said that it never happened, and Triple H got the belt back, and I think actually at the end of that same show there was a six-man tag, and if I remember correctly, Triple H actually beat Jericho. And then they had a pay-per-view match at Fully Loaded in 2000, I remember this now. It was a last-man-standing match, a hell of a match between Jericho and Triple H, and Triple H won that match as well. It's just like, every time these two guys are in the ring, you can bet your bottom dollar that Triple H probably was the one who came out with his hand raised. And I just remember that Hell in a Cell match in 02, and I remember Tim White got injured in that match. His refereeing career essentially ended that day. He suffered a very bad shoulder injury. He tried to come back as a referee, and every time he would... I mean, as a referee, you need use of your arm and your shoulder. You're constantly dropping down. You're counting the fall. And I just remember Tim White was so badly injured that they didn't think he would make it back. He tried to come back, and every time he would try to count, his arm would pop out of the socket. So his career essentially ended as a result of an injury sustained in that Hell in a Cell match that never should have happened in the first place. It's just one of those things that you can't predict something like that. But that's one example, I think, of an unnecessary Hell in a Cell match. And they've had tons of those. I mean, hell, they have a whole fucking pay-per-view now called Hell in a Cell that shouldn't even exist. It completely kills the gimmick dead to the point where it's already dead. Hell in a Cell pay-per-view last year, I think, did pretty shitty compared to the year before that. It's this downward spiral of numbers if you really look at it. And it's a shame. So when Triple H says only 24 Hell in a Cell matches, are you kidding me? Only 24? There should have been at least half that number. Maybe it would actually mean something. So Triple H said that he knew what it would take to end the streak. The Undertaker asked him if he was sure that he was willing to put everything on the line. It almost sounded like it was turning into a career versus career match without actually saying that. I'm not sure that that's actually the case. I guess we'll find out this Monday. But Triple H said that he was ready to put it all on the line. And Undertaker went to go walk away, stopped himself, came back, and he said, you know, when I mentioned that Shawn Michaels was better than you, and I think he kind of leaned in and told Triple H, he said, he is. And then he walked away. And Shawn Michaels was seen on camera smiling at this. Triple H turned and stared at him, and Michaels, the smile got wiped away from his face. And then as soon as Triple H turned back to look towards The Undertaker, Michaels started smiling again. And that was it. That was your Raw show from last Monday night. An awkward way, I think, for the show to end. I see what they're trying to do here by furthering this storyline. But to me, if this was your big main event segment that you had planned for the show, and the big revelation was Undertaker repeating something he already said 2 weeks ago, that's not a main event right there. And it would have been more appropriate, if not Rock and Cena, to allow Chris Jericho and CM Punk. We all know what the two big matches are on this show, and neither of them are for the world championship, but Punk and Jericho is number three, and it is for the WWE title, which is the championship they treat with more reverence, certainly more than the World Heavyweight title. They deserve, I think, the opportunity to kind of end the show one of these weeks on Raw, maybe not this Monday, because the hard sell this Monday has to be Rock vs. Cena, but I think this week's show would have been an appropriate time to do that if this was all they had planned. It was kind of a flat ending to me, but flat ending to what was an otherwise good show. Again, Raw, for the most part, had been pretty good over the last couple of weeks. WrestleMania tends to light a fire under their ass anyway, and you just hope that flame doesn't extinguish itself, you know, the night after WrestleMania. Hopefully they've got something up their sleeve once the big show goes away. The other thing that they announced on Raw Monday night was that they were doing a one-hour countdown-style show before Raw this Monday. So for those of you who may have already forgotten, 8 o'clock Eastern time, before Raw goes on the air this Monday night, they will have a special Rock vs. John Cena program. And it's called Once in a Lifetime. They put a press release out. And the big part about it isn't even so much the show, which I actually think is a really good idea. I've argued before they should borrow more ideas like that, even from the world of UFC or even boxing. It's not just a UFC exclusive thing. When they have a big fight, they will promote it through this type of show where they kind of follow these guys a day in the life of, and they show them training, and they show them with their family, and they really make the match seem like a big deal. It's not just another wrestling match. It's more than that. So I like the idea that they're doing this, but the big thing about it in the press release, it mentions that not only is the show going to air on USA Network before Raw on Monday night, but the show will also replay during the week on other NBC-owned networks, including Sci-Fi, Bravo, E!, Oxygen, which seems like an awkward place to put a wrestling show, but Oxygen, G4, NBC Sports, which used to be the old Versus Network, it just got renamed, MUN2, which is a Spanish language channel, and Universal HD, among others. That's a really big deal. This show is going to be replaying on all of these different properties all throughout the week, the hope being that they will help draw interest from non-wrestling fans or old wrestling fans who see this, and they see Rock vs. Cena as a big deal, and they want to buy WrestleMania. Now, are these non-wrestling fans going to pony up $50 or $60 in HD to watch WrestleMania for 4 hours? I don't know about that. But it's a smart move on their part, and it's one of those things that really illustrates the benefits of the WWE-NBC relationship. You know, even though the whole Saturday night's main event revival bombed, it has its benefits, and this is one of them. And hey, anything that could potentially bring new business in for WWE and boost that buy rate, it certainly can't hurt, but it's going to depend really on the quality of the show. Now, I have no problem believing that the WWE production team is going to put together a bang-up show. I think it'll be a phenomenal show. I haven't, you know, seen it or anything. I look forward to watching it. I'm sure that they know what they're doing, and they're going to put together a show that really does make this thing feel like a big deal. And that's what you got to do. When you're 1 week out from the show, you've got to do everything in your power to publicize that match, make the match feel like a big deal. If you can do that in the 6 days before the show, you'll be fine. I mean, in MMA, that's how it works. I mean, you don't have 6 weeks of build-up in MMA to a pay-per-view. It really comes down to that last week, and if anything, those last 3, 4, 5 days can put a fight over the top, and they've done buy rates that have rivaled some of the biggest WWE buy rates of all time for a fight that might not even be that big of a deal. But if the promotion is that good of that fight, it can make all the difference in the world. So, once in a lifetime, Rock vs. Cena airs on USA again, 8 o'clock before Raw Monday night. If you're going to DVR it, whatever you're going to do, that's when that show is going to air. By the way, Curt Hawkins, I read, has been the guy training with The Rock to get him into shape for his match at WrestleMania with John Cena. So I thought that was an interesting little nugget to mention here. Strange bedfellows those two make, Curt Hawkins and The Rock. But there you go. The other thing that was not announced on Raw Monday night due to time constraints, I believe it was announced on SmackDown Friday night. First, it was announced on WWE.com that former two-time WWE champion Yokozuna will be inducted into the Class of 2012 Hall of Fame. And I mentioned on this podcast many, many weeks ago that I said I would hold off on giving my thoughts until it was made official, Yokozuna's induction. And now that it has been officially announced, I can talk a little bit about this because Yokozuna was somebody who I don't think gets enough credit. He was a very big guy, a very large guy. I think people tend to look at that and go, well, you know, he was just a big fat guy. Yokozuna was not just a big fat guy. He wasn't even always that large. He got larger over time to the point where, unfortunately, he had become practically immobile. I mean, he was in the ring and couldn't really do hardly anything at the end. He had ballooned at one point up to 804 pounds. I remember them doing an article about it on, I believe it might have been in the WWE magazine. He had gotten to over 800 pounds, and he had lost some of that weight, but not enough, and he passed away in 2000 from a heart attack, I believe in a hotel room in the UK. He was only 34 years old, but when you're that large and you're not taking care of yourself, that's what happens. But before he allowed his weight to really spiral out of control, you know, when he first came into the WWF, they announced him at 505 pounds, and I'm sure his legitimate weight was probably not too far off. It was probably a little bit more, a little bit less. He was a big guy, but he can move around. He can move around almost like a lightweight. You know, he would throw the thrust kick. He could come off the ropes and nail you with a simple leg drop. But because of how big he was, that leg drop meant so much more than it would than if it had come from somebody like the 1-2-3 Kid, for example. So he can get away with doing stuff like that. He wouldn't do moves off the top rope or anything, but he moved around the ring a lot quicker, I think, than people would have expected somebody like him to move around. And you hear from people like Bret Hart, who claims, you know, Bret Hart says he loved working with him. He was so light. You know, he could take a leg drop from Yokozuna, which looked absolutely devastating, and it might even leave, you know, like a butt print on his forehead or something, but it wouldn't hurt him at all. He was so light to the touch that, you know, Bret loved working with him and thought he was a really good guy. Rikishi once told the story, I think, when you know, because he's part of that whole Samoan family, Yokozuna was. And I don't know his exact relationship with Rikishi, if they're cousins or what exactly the nature of the relationship is, but they were all part of that same Samoan family. And on one of the WWF confidential shows, I think, that they did many years ago, one of those magazine-style shows, Rikishi told the story about Yokozuna hitting it big, making a lot of money, and I think, you know, Rikishi's family needed money for something, or like a new air conditioner they were going to freeze, whatever the story was, and Yokozuna, no problem, you know, bought him whatever he needed. He had a big heart. His heart was as big as his body was, and I always like Yokozuna, his matches, you know, I don't know what it is. It's not like they were technical masterpieces or anything, and maybe it had more to do with his opponent, because Yokozuna and The Undertaker had some really crappy matches, and they had some good matches too. But Bret Hart, for example, was a guy who could bring the best out of Yokozuna. It was that whole David and Goliath dynamic. WrestleMania 9, not remembered fondly by too many people. And I'm not going to sit here and argue that Bret versus Yoko was even close to being the best WrestleMania main event of all time. But there was something about that match that I liked. Not so much the WrestleMania 10 match, but the WrestleMania 9 match. Just this, you know, Bret Hart had this uncanny ability to go in there and really make it seem like he was getting his ass kicked whenever he was in there with almost anybody, but especially an opponent bigger than him. And they played that match so perfectly, even with the fuck finish and everything, and it was just really good stuff. And he was the WWE champion for quite a while, that second reign. He won the title at the King of the Ring, did not drop it until WrestleMania the following year. He was a drawing champion. He made money for WWE. He did draw for the company, unlike somebody like Kevin Nash, for example, who was on top for a year and business bombed for WWF. I mean, it was just absolutely atrocious. But Yokozuna was a true drawing card for the company at a time when they desperately needed somebody like that. They needed a heel to hold on to the championship who could draw people in, who could have these matches with people like The Undertaker or like a Bret Hart, like a Lex Luger, who everybody thought was going to win the championship and never actually did win the title from Yokozuna. So I think his induction into the Hall of Fame is long overdue. It's well-deserved. It's hard to believe he passed away over a decade. It's been 12 years since he passed away. And I believe he is being inducted. Well, let's go through this here. I assume that Yokozuna is the final inductee into the Hall of Fame. I suppose they have time to announce one more name if they wanted to on TV this week. But as of right now, the class of 2012 and their reported inductors are as follows. Edge will be inducted by Christian. The Four Horsemen, and again, Ric Flair has said he will be at the Hall of Fame. I know there were negotiations still ongoing. Perhaps they still are, between WWE and TNA, because Ric Flair is a TNA contracted talent, and TNA probably wants something in exchange for his participation. WWE, perhaps, is going to be the big bully. You know, they're going to do what they want and not give TNA what they want, no matter how inconsequential it may be. You know, TNA may just want them to mention that Ric Flair is a current TNA star. And I just can't see WWE agreeing to something like that. But, you know, the reality is they went and made the announcement and never had any sort of deal in place with TNA. It was kind of a shitty move on WWE's part. I don't really blame TNA for it. Flair said he'll be there. I guess we'll find out. The Horsemen apparently now are going to be inducted solely by Dusty Rhodes. Originally, there was some thought that they would be inducted by Shawn Michaels and Triple H. Shawn Michaels and Triple H now are scheduled, I believe, to induct Mike Tyson into the Hall of Fame, which would be appropriate. Tyson was a member of DX, even if the whole thing was exposed as a ruse. Originally, you know, the belief was that Stone Cold Steve Austin would induct Mike Tyson. Now it looks like it'll be DX inducting, and where that leaves Austin, I don't know. It's possible Austin will not even be at WrestleMania this year. If he's not at the Hall of Fame, he doesn't have any role on the actual show, perhaps Stone Cold will not be in Miami at all for the festivities. I guess we'll find out. Yokozuna will be inducted by Rikishi and the Usos, who are his sons, so that makes sense. I know there were some rumors that The Rock might induct him at one point, but I guess they decided to go with family. Well, I guess Rock would also be part of that family. But anyway, Rikishi and the Usos apparently will be inducting Yokozuna. Mil Máscaras being inducted by his nephew, Alberto Del Rio, and Ron Simmons, Farouk, will be inducted by JBL. So that's the current roster for the Hall of Fame 2012. That induction ceremony takes place next Saturday, March 31st. I will be there. And let's give a quick rundown here also of the WrestleMania 28 card. This is the card as it exists today. It is subject to change. Again, they could add something on the show this week. Maybe Miz finally gets put in a match. But the card, as of right now, of course, we have John Cena and The Rock in the main event, built up for a year. It all leads to this. Undertaker, Triple H, Hell in a Cell. It is what they call the end of an era match, the second end of an era match in WWF history. The first end of an era match, at least as far as calling it an end of an era match, was actually a match that involved The Undertaker in 1999. It was a first blood match with Steve Austin and The Undertaker, and they billed it as the end of an era because if Undertaker lost, Vince McMahon would have to leave. Undertaker lost, Vince McMahon left, and then he was back 2 weeks later. Actually, 3 weeks, I think. But it's the end of an era match. Shawn Michaels will be the guest referee. It is a Hell in a Cell match. And I think they're going to have a kick-ass match. I really do. I think it's WrestleMania. Undertaker always has his A-game going. Triple H, when he wants to be, can still be great as well. Their match last year at WrestleMania was proof of that. To me, it was one of the best match really, if it wasn't the best match of the year, it was certainly one of the best matches of the year, one of the better matches in WrestleMania history. Not as good as Michaels and Undertaker, but pretty damn close. Will we see blood? Will we not see blood? We'll find out. World Championship on the line. Daniel Bryan defends against Sheamus. We have the WWE title on the line. CM Punk defends against Chris Jericho for the honor of his family, I guess. We have the Intercontinental Champion, Cody Rhodes, defending the title. I believe it's a title match, and he'll be defending against The Big Show. Randy Orton and Kane will have their little match. We have the Divas Champion, Beth Phoenix, teaming up with Eve Torres to take on the team of Kelly Kelly and Maria Menounos, who you can vote for if you're into that on the current season of Dancing with the Stars. And the big Team Teddy versus Team Johnny 12-man tag team match. It is not an elimination because that would take way too long. Team Johnny, captained by David Otunga. Dolph Ziggler will be there. Jack Swagger, Mark Henry, Christian. And I'm not quite sure who the sixth member is going to be. The belief was that it would be Alberto Del Rio, and it might be. Supposedly, Del Rio has said that perhaps he will not be at WrestleMania this year. I don't know if that's a shoot, if that's a work. So it may or may not be Alberto Del Rio rounding out the heel team. We'll find out on Monday. They will face Team Teddy, captain by the United States champion Santino Marella. He will be partnering up with the Great Khali, Zack Ryder, Kofi Kingston, R-Truth, and a mystery man. We have a one slot left to be filled. Again, if rumors are to be believed, Rey Mysterio may be the person to fill that slot. We'll find out, I guess, this week. I would imagine they're going to want to announce it on TV. I know Rey Mysterio is scheduled for a lot of activities in Miami. I think he might be part of Access. I think he's part of some reading event. He'll be in town. And for somebody like Rey Mysterio, who may not be 100% healed from his surgery on his knee, if he's pretty close to coming back, it's an easy way to get him on the card. You know, he doesn't have to do much. He's one of 12 people in a match that probably won't go more than 10 minutes if that. All he's got to do is stand on the apron for, 10 minutes and maybe come in and do one move and leave. So we'll find out if it's Mysterio. Obviously, selfishly biased as I may be, I would love it if they announced that the Funkasaurus, Brodus Clay, had a spot on WrestleMania and would be shoved in that match and he could do his whole entrance and the whole nine yards. No offense to Ray, but I guess we'll find out what they do on Raw Monday night. And that's the card. That's WrestleMania 28. Now, I was going to do my WrestleMania predictions on the show this week. I am not going to do that. And the little announcement that I said earlier I would have is actually in reference to the next episode of the Sound Off, episode 212, which was originally going to be, a post-WrestleMania show, not immediately. But after I get back, I will be in Miami. I will certainly have a full rundown and wrap-up of my full WrestleMania experience and the results and all that. Instead, what we're going to do, and that'll be Sound Off 213, I am going to be recording the first ever Sound Off on location. And that Sound Off will be episode 212 from Miami. And I'm planning on recording that show next Friday, March 30th. That's the current plan. That certainly is subject to change. I will not be, at the stadium doing the show or anything like that, but I will be in Miami, Florida. Obviously, I'm there for WrestleMania. And I was not planning on doing a show, but I will, in fact, be recording a Sound Off live from Miami. Most likely, the day will be Friday the 30th. It'll be, a recorded show. I'll upload it when we're done doing the whole deal. And, so that's the announcement. There's going to be a show done on Friday. I'll have WrestleMania predictions. I will probably be hitting up Access on Thursday night. That sounds like the plan as of right now. If I do, I'll certainly have an Access report to share with you as well. But if nothing else, we'll run down the WrestleMania card in full, coming off the go-home show this Monday. If anything big happens on the go-home show on Monday, I'll certainly talk about that as well. And we'll do the predictions. We'll run down the whole deal. I don't know if we'll do any mailbag questions. We'll find out. But so keep that in mind. Definitely keep it locked into SEScoops.com throughout the entire weekend for any and all WrestleMania news. All you'll need is SEScoops.com and Sound Off episode 212 live from Miami, the first time ever that the Sound Off is going on the road. I'm looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun. And you never know, I might even have some surprises up my sleeve for said show from Miami. So this will definitely not be one to miss. And again, I can't stress this enough. For anybody who's not already following me on Twitter, friended me on Facebook, or subscribed to the show in iTunes, now is the time to do it. I am on Twitter, at Solomonster. I will be, probably even more so Twitter than Facebook, I will be updating as often as I can from the moment I land. I'm actually supposed to be landing in Miami on Thursday afternoon. And like I said, I'll probably be hitting up Access that night. I'll be recording the show at some point on Friday. There's the Hall of Fame. I will be attending the Hall of Fame on Saturday night. Obviously, I'll be at WrestleMania on Sunday at Sun Life Stadium. And I'll be at the American Airlines Arena for Raw Monday as well. I am not going to SmackDown, which I think is in Orlando. I am done at that point. I am coming back to New York happily on Tuesday. But I will be hitting all of the major events, Access, Hall of Fame, Mania, Raw. And I might even try to squeeze in Wrestle Reunion somewhere in there. They have these Wrestle Reunion events that take place. I think this is the seventh one, I think. Bill Apter is the one who is hosting. And there's Wrestle Reunion 7 from Miami. They're going to have a bunch of legends. I know, I think, Honky Tonk Man and Jake the Snake and Sonny and Road Warrior Animal and Vader and Lex Luger. Just a whole bunch of different people. And it's not that far, actually, from where Access is. It's at the Miami Beach DeVille Resort, I think, hotel. So if I am able to make it over there, I would love to be able to make it over there, even just to kind of scan the area, look around, get some pictures. I will be attempting to do that. And again, on Twitter, I'll be uploading photos and videos and any sort of breaking news or anything like that. So on Twitter, it's at Solomonster. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/TheSolomonster. And in iTunes, you already know, just type in the name of the show, it'll come right up and subscribe. So when episode 212 does go up, as you know, Podbean permitting, of course, as long as the service works, that show should be posted pretty quickly. And you'll be all hooked up. So if you can't make it to WrestleMania this year, by all means, follow me through all of those methods and live vicariously for me. Because this is my first WrestleMania. I know many of you have already been to Mania many times before. You've, by and large, seem to have all enjoyed yourselves, no matter where you were sitting or what you were doing. And I'm looking forward to the full, complete WrestleMania experience. So join me and follow me along on there, if you will. Let's talk about the other big story of the week here. It concerns developmental and the possibility that Florida Championship Wrestling, FCW, might be shutting down. That report has since been refuted by WWE, but that doesn't mean anything. Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer first reported on Monday night after Raw that officials from WWE had informed the Bright House Sports Network, which airs the FCW shows down in Florida, that they are closing down the promotion and will not be doing any more television after the final couple of shows that were taped air on TV. And WWE supposedly informed Bright House they are folding the company, closing the gym, and moving everybody to Stamford, Connecticut for the time being until they figure out what they're going to do with developmental. And those in WWE had heard the news and were given the impression that this was probably going to happen, that there would be some sort of developmental system out of Connecticut. Possibly they would open up more than just one, so it wouldn't just be in Connecticut. And that's where things were left. And then there was an article the very next day posted on WWE.com that refuted the Observer report. And they actually interviewed, or supposedly they interviewed Triple H for this article. And Triple H claimed, quote, "It is absolutely not true. FCW is not closing. I don't know how the rumor started, but I believe it is a situation where the, quote, dirt sheets want to believe they have the scoop on everything. If anything, we are in the process of ramping up our entire developmental system. It is the lifeblood of our company. It's what feeds our future, and in no way are we going to close it down," end quote. Now, before I move on here, I don't believe at any point Meltzer or anybody else suggested that developmental was being completely shut down. That's not what was said. What was said was that FCW would be shutting down. So I just wanted to make that point. Triple H also said that there are plans in the works, but nothing is definitive right now that he can discuss. Now, what he's referencing when he says this are supposed plans to relocate FCW, either the TV tapings or the training, out of Tampa, Florida, where it's currently based. Basically, what Triple H is saying here without even saying it is that, yes, there is something in the works. I can't talk about it right now. So, in effect, he's not refuting the entire Observer report. It seems like what pissed WWE off was this whole thing that FCW is shutting down. which sounds like it was either a miscommunication or it was the truth, and now they're trying to backpedal. But where there's smoke, there's fire. There are certain people who report wrestling news that I think are very reliable people. They're very good at what they do. When they say something, it's probably true, or there's some truth to it, or was truth to it at some point. It's not a report that has been yanked down. It's not a report that they apologize for. So I believe where there's smoke, there's fire. And even if FCW itself is not going to, quote, shut down, there are some things happening right now, and it sounds like there may be, developmental that is going to be relocating at some point to Connecticut. So, you know, we'll find out. You know, Triple H talked about the developmental system possibly being built up, which I think would be a fantastic idea. I think you need more than just one developmental company. You need multiple ones, I think. It would make sense in different parts of the country, maybe even different parts of the world. I don't know how practical that is, and that certainly takes money. But I'll get to that in a second. I'll talk more about that. There were other reports on other websites as well talking about the Connecticut connection and how something could very well happen where developmental is shifted over to Stamford in the next couple of months. What I thought was another interesting nugget from the Observer was with respect to what the guys in developmental are paid. Because we all know that the guys down there don't make a lot of money. You know, they really don't. The people in developmental, especially the ones that are there for years and years waiting for their big break, these are people that do it for the love of the sport, or in this case, you know, the love of the genre. It's not unlike, you know, minor league baseball players. I've done work for a baseball team before, and I can tell you, those minor league guys, those players, are not down there to be rich and famous. They do it for the love of the game. They don't make hardly any money at all. In many cases, they may not even make as much as the WWE developmental guys, who apparently are making a salary of $24,000 per year. By and large, I think that's what the WWE developmental guys make, $24,000 a year. It's not a lot of money. Especially if you have a family or a girlfriend or whatever. I mean, not everybody's a single guy. It's not a lot of money. Some guys go to developmental. They're only there for a couple of weeks or a couple of months. There are guys in FCW that have been there for years, probably making the same amount of money. You think they do that because, you know, they have to do it? Somebody put a gun to their head? They do it because they have a passion for it, because they think in the end it's going to pay off. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen for the vast majority of the people down there. I'm sure for people like a Seth Rollins or a Dean Ambrose and probably somebody like Claudio, Chris Hero, guys like that who have what it takes to make it on the main stage, they probably will end up making pretty decent money for themselves, and hopefully they'll become big stars. And 5-6 years from now, if I'm still doing this show, I'll be sitting here recording the sound off talking about, you know, world champion Seth Rollins or world champion, you know, Chris Hero or something to that effect. But these guys have my respect because for very little money, they put their bodies through hell. They probably deal with a lot of bullshit, you know, working in developmental, but they do it because they have a passion for it. But the issue, I guess, with potentially moving things to Connecticut is the cost of living issue. I mean, believe me, I live in New York. Cost of living, I don't think is worse, as bad as it is in New York, I don't think it's any worse than any other city in the entire country. New York is the absolute dirt worst. When it comes to the cost of living, it is ridiculously expensive to live in New York, especially New York City. Connecticut is not much better. It's not easy to live in Connecticut if you don't have a lot of money. So the idea that these guys would be forced to move up from Florida, which has no state income tax, and move up to Connecticut, I can understand where there would be some trepidation and some concern on their part. I would certainly be worried if I wasn't making a lot of money and somebody told me, hey, you got to move to Stamford. You got to find a place to live. That's a pretty scary thought. So we have yet to find out exactly what will happen. I think from the sound of it, after WrestleMania, maybe not the week after, but sometime shortly after WrestleMania, there probably will be a big announcement made by WWE, and we'll know more about that. I think it was Vincent on Facebook, one of our Facebook followers, who asked me during the week if I think WWE should implement two systems of developmental. One for wrestlers who have no experience whatsoever when they come in, or very, very little, and another for, quote, refinement, for guys like Hero and Claudio and others who already know how to work and just need a few tweaks before being called up to TV. as I told Vincent, I would rather see WWE either contract with indie promotions for their developmental talent to work there and on those shows and gain experience on those shows, or set up 3 or 4 different territories in different parts of the country where their guys can work and they can rotate talent out after a couple of months so they don't get stale and they can learn different styles instead of just one. The WWE style. You know, everyone's programmed like a robot. Everyone looks the same, wrestles the same, sounds the same. It's the same thing with promos, too. There's a lot of sameness, and I think doing something like that and rotating guys out, put them here, put them there, put them in this city for this indie or whatever the case may be, would do a lot of good. You know, I don't know what their budget is, but they don't invest nearly enough money, in my opinion, in developmental, and they need to start doing that pronto. You know, they had to start doing that yesterday. I mean, if I were in charge of WWE and I took a look at all the finances and all the different areas of the company, developmental would be pretty high on my list of areas that I would want to invest in. There's a lot of really good wrestlers out there, some of whom are now finally getting noticed by WWE, some of whom will probably never get a shot at WWE. Somebody like a Colt Cabana or somebody like that, that they're just not interested in. And that's a shame, but there's so much talent out there. It just, it feels to me like it's just going to waste. You know, we sit here and complain about certain people. Oh my God, this guy sounds like a robot, or this guy looks like every other guy that's come by. He's got big muscles. He can't wrestle, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't have to be that way. There's so many guys out there with weird looks and different looks and, you know, big guys and small guys, tall guys and fat guys. And I mean, when Husky Harris was up here, I loved Husky Harris. The guy was like a tank with legs. He would go in there and beat the hell out of people, and they took him off TV because they thought he had a weight issue. They said they wanted him to lose weight. Now, if you want him to lose weight for his own health, if he's really getting, you know, morbidly obese and you're worried about his health and well-being, I'm cool with that. That's fine. I mean, at one point, WWE sent Big Show to a fat farm many years ago because they were worried about his weight getting out of control. That's fine. But if it's a cosmetic thing and you don't think somebody like Husky Harris looks like the way a WWE superstar should look, I say that's complete bullshit. I think it's good to have a variety of guys. When you had guys like, I mentioned King Kong Bundy earlier, there's a room for people like King Kong Bundy in wrestling. There's a room for people who don't look like the average Joe in WWE, you know, with a six-pack of abs and tattoos all over their body. You know, we've seen enough of that. And a guy like Husky Harris, by the way, is still in developmental. Supposedly, he actually lost a little bit of weight recently. And WWE is finally putting together ideas to bring Husky Harris back up to the main roster. I don't know if he would have a new gimmick, a new name, but that's, to me, that's encouraging news. So again, developmental is a very big deal. You know, Triple H talks about it. It's the future. It is the future. It is the future. And the future is in limbo right now. And I guess we'll find out after WrestleMania exactly what they've got planned. Evan Bourne in the news this week. His suspension, his 60-day suspension for his second drug test violation ended on St. Patrick's Day, actually, March 17th. And he wrote on Twitter this week that he broke his foot in an accident. He broke his foot in 4 places, dislocated it in 5 other places. And so he's going to be out for quite some time. I don't know how long, probably a matter of months, not weeks. And that really sucks for him. You know, I talked when Evan Bourne got suspended the second time. I, like a lot of people, thought to myself, what an idiot. What an idiot. Maybe the guy has a problem, though, and he needs some serious help for that problem. Well, now his suspension is up, and, you know, we'll find out what the deal is. I mean, if he gets a 3rd violation, I think it's an automatic termination from the company. So he's on pretty thin ice as it is, but for him to now be in a, I think it was a car accident, and, you know, break his foot, and his foot's all mangled, that's never a good thing. So hopefully he'll heal up quickly as he can. He'll get another shot, or maybe not. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I don't know what their policy is right now, WWE, on cutting people who are out with injuries. I know they did it with Test. When Test had his neck surgery, that spinal fusion surgery, which was going to keep him out for up to a year, and they cut him while he was recovering from neck surgery. Which was not cool. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that WWE kind of looks at this and throws their hands up in the air and says, you know, here we go again. We were already thinking possibly of getting rid of this guy. He was already on the bubble. Now he gets hurt. Now he's going to be out for another 6 months. Let's just get rid of him. Wouldn't shock me if we heard the news sometime in the near future that Evan Bourne was being wished well in his future endeavors. But whatever the case may be, hopefully he will recover and he'll be able to come back. A little bit of a follow-up on the Eric Bischoff, Jeremy Borash stuff. I mentioned Eric Bischoff's ridiculously stupid comments about Borash on Twitter last week. I didn't think it was an angle. In fact, I'm pretty well convinced it was not an angle, even if they want to turn it into one. According to a news item from the Pro Wrestling Insider website, the belief is that since Eric Bischoff's comments about Jeremy Borash garnered so much attention on the internet and within the ranks of TNA, they will probably be turning it into a work. And the original statement was not something that was planned by the creative team within TNA. There were a lot of people in TNA actually very upset when they found out about Eric Bischoff's comments. So that just goes to show you right there that it wasn't Eric Bischoff in character making a dumb comment about one of his employees and how they should be so fortunate to even have a job. You know, they're so terrible that they ought not to complain about anything and just be on their hands and knees thanking, you know, Lord Bischoff and the TNA gods that they still are employed by the company. So now they may turn it into a whole storyline just to save face, and who gives a shit? It was a stupid thing for Bischoff to say. I can't see him as the apologizing type either. It would be nice to think that maybe he said he was sorry in private to Jeremy Borash. I mean, who knows whether he did or not. Only Bischoff and Borash know that for sure. Eric Bischoff does not strike me as the humble type. He does not strike me as somebody very willing to turn around and apologize for something that he has said or apologize for something he has done. It was really a lowbrow bullshit comment for him to make. And anyway, that's the follow-up on it. If it turns into a storyline on TV, you'll know why. Kurt Angle went nutsy cuckoo on Twitter again this week. On Tuesday night, Kurt Angle went batshit insane in the latest installment of Twitter for Crazy People. This time he said that he wasn't hacked, although many of the tweets that he posted have since been deleted. Again, there is no better telltale sign of somebody realizing they were posting stupid shit than when they remove their tweets. That pretty much says it all right there. Like Hornswoggle a couple weeks ago, who actually has since made up with The Rock. He actually apologized to The Rock, so even he realized he was making stupid comments. Among the things Kurt Angle said before he took them down, he said that it took Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin 15 years to get over, while he did it in just one. And he claimed that he could take them in a shoot fight, which I'm sure he can. I mean, for God's sake, Kurt Angle is an Olympic gold medalist. Even with a mangled neck and a mangled body, Kurt Angle is a tough SOB. Shawn Michaels never claimed to be tough in real life. And Steve Austin, while I'm sure Austin could hold his own, he plays tough guys in the movies, but Steve Austin was never known as being a real tough guy either. So the idea that Kurt Angle says I could take them in a shoot fight, no shit. He said that he told Jim Ross, actually he did, he tweeted Jim Ross on Twitter, that he planned to retire in TNA, but in the next breath he asked, how would Jim Ross feel about Kurt Angle headlining WrestleMania one more time? I'm not sure if JR ever responded. And in response to a fan question, Kurt said, I have not touched a pill in 8 years. Up yours! Angle said that he gets tested for the Olympics and that he was not drunk while he was posting these tweets. He has actually since apologized to Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin for his remarks, and he says that he might stop tweeting because he speaks his mind and he can't help himself and is just having fun. Kurt Angle can't understand why everybody's making such a big deal about this. He just wants to have fun. And I'll be honest with you, I kind of feel sorry for the guy. I don't know why. I feel bad when I rag on him, but I like Kurt Angle. I really do. I, you know, if I saw Kurt Angle, I would want to walk up to him and shake his hand. I think, you know, the guy won an Olympic gold medal for the United States. He accomplished a lot in the wrestling industry in a very short period of time, and then he kind of self-destructed, and the whole thing is just kind of sad more than anything else. Kurt's one of my favorite wrestlers of the last 15 years, and when I hear about him getting pulled over for the umpteenth time by the cops, or, you know, raving like a maniac on Twitter because Randy Orton stole his finish, or Jack Swagger stole the ankle lock, the whole thing just makes me sad. I want Kurt to be healthy and happy. I hope he is. I would love to have Kurt Angle have one more WrestleMania match. I think he's a shoo-in for the Hall of Fame once he leaves TNA. Just stop posting stupid shit, that's all. One last note here, which is not wrestling related, but I will tie it into wrestling for you. concerns another TV show that I know at least some of you are fans of, The Walking Dead, which actually had its season finale, its season 2 finale last Sunday. And, you know, we talk about ratings here a lot as far as wrestling is concerned and how important the ratings are to WWE and to TNA especially. I mean, again, if Spike TV were to go away, or Spike TV ever canceled Impact, that would be the end of TNA as we know it. So ratings are kind of an important thing, and The Walking Dead had their finale last weekend and just completely blew all of these other television shows out of the water. I mean, they posted numbers the likes of which I have not seen on cable television in a long-ass time, if ever. The finale got 9 million total viewers last weekend, including 6 million of which came from that highly coveted 18 to 49-year-old demographic, which wrestling also goes after. And they're wondering why they have fewer and fewer people in that demographic watching their shows. 6 million people. 5.3 million people in the 25 to 54 demo. These numbers are just astounding. Those are incredible numbers for cable television. In fact, the show is so far, it's the highest rated drama of the entire season on any cable or broadcast network. Who knew that young people would be so interested in a show about zombies? I know I couldn't have figured that out. To put this in perspective, from a wrestling perspective, Raw, each Monday night, will average about 4 to 5 million viewers, which is considered pretty good for cable TV. It's just, to me, with a show like The Walking Dead, whether you're a fan of it or not, it's just nice to see a regular scripted television series kicking ass, as opposed to the usual reality TV garbage that gets shoved down our throats. And I'm a big fan of the show, and it warmed my heart to read the news that there were people who were actually tuning in to watch this and not the Jersey Shore. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just a nice, refreshing thought to have. And season 3 of the show actually kicks off in October, which would be a nice birthday gift for me, so I'm looking forward to that. I've come to the conclusion, if you're a fan of the show, you'll know what I'm talking about. I've come to the conclusion that all of the women on The Walking Dead need to be devoured by zombies and killed off. They cause nothing but trouble for all of the men. But then again, you know, if you took the women away and there were no problems, then you'd probably have 2 episodes per season, so I guess that's why they keep them around. But the other thought I had, we need to get our friend Tim Arson, the zombie from ECW, a guest role on The Walking Dead next season. I actually tweeted him about that, and he was in favor of the idea. And for those of you, by the way, nice cheap plug here, who may have missed it, you can go back and listen to my interview with the zombie from episode 129 of The Sound Off. If you want to find out the correct way, the proper way to kill a zombie, we talk about that at the very beginning of the interview. So go back and listen to that. That was episode 129. The first interview I ever did on The Sound Off was with the zombie. So you want to go check that out. Got a few shout-outs to get to here. As always, you can send your shout-outs and mailbag questions. Email is the best way to do so. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. We'll start out with some shout-outs here. First one is for Jack from Belfast, who has been a fan of this show since episode 90 and listens loyally every single week. Jack's birthday is actually today, the 25th. I was wondering if he can get a shout-out here on the show. He's turning 19 years old. Well, happy birthday, Jack. I appreciate your support. Jack's been a fan of the show for a while. I've heard from him quite a bit over the last couple of years, so I appreciate your support. Happy birthday. Shaber also writes into The Sound Off. He says, my girlfriend and I listen to The Sound Off, and this Sunday is her birthday and our first anniversary, so I wanted to give her a little something special when we get home after dinner. I was wondering if she could please get a shout-out on The Sound Off. Her name is Nafisa. So happy birthday to Nafisa, and happy anniversary, too, to both you guys. I know Shaber as well, big fan of the show. Apparently his girlfriend is too, which I was not aware of, which is always cool to find out. So happy birthday to her and happy anniversary to the two of you. Hopefully you are having some fun as we speak. As I am recording this right now, hopefully you're having some fun, whatever your definition of fun is. This is a PG. Actually, this is not a PG show. Fuck that. Next shout out here comes from Nick Boyd, my Scottish listener, as he calls himself. Any chance I can get a shout-out in your next show, Solomonster? I got diagnosed with cancer a week before Christmas last year and was almost paralyzed due to the tumor on my spine. Wrestling and this very podcast kept me entertained while in the hospital. I'm on the mend now and walking. Been a listener since episode 2 and will always listen. So that comes from Nick, And I just want to say to Nick, as I think I said to him when I responded to his original email, I'm happy to hear that he's doing well. That's the most important thing, because my family certainly is no stranger to cancer. Cancer sucks. If there was one thing that I wish we could completely terminate and eradicate off the face of the planet, cancer would probably be at the top of my list. And I'm very happy to hear that you're doing better. And if this show helped you in some small way, then that's even cooler. So I'm very happy to hear that. And keep on listening. Last shout-out here goes out to our friend Mike, a fellow New Yorker. Mike also will be in Miami for WrestleMania next weekend. He says he'll be sitting along the ramp and is bringing his Solomonster sign. So that's a message to all of you listening right now. Everybody pay attention. Let me know if you actually see it. By the way, if anybody does bring a Solomonster sign besides Mike to WrestleMania and I happen to see it, I want to get a picture with you. And I will give you the mother of all shout-outs on this very show. So just a little incentive for those of you wondering what sign should I bring to WrestleMania. That might be a good idea for you. Anyway, Mike is going with his best friend Melissa and would like a shout out for her. So Melissa, if you're listening, have fun. And if Mike tries to make you hold up the sign, tell him to get lost. That's your job, buddy, not hers. Let's dive right into the mailbag questions here. This first one comes from Matt Hardy. No, not that Matt Hardy, but we do have a Matt Hardy who is a very big fan of the show. It's written in a couple of times. Lives in London, UK. He writes and he says, Solomonster, I was wondering if I could ask you and your listeners for some ideas and opinions. Actually, it's more market research, to be honest. I will be involved in the writing of the 2013 TNA Impact Wrestling Annual for the UK and European market. To be honest, it's been a long time since I've even looked at an annual, so I am interested in any thoughts as to what people would like to see in it. I know a lot of your listeners are the wrong demographic for annuals, but all opinions would be appreciated, especially from any fans with kids. I am particularly interested if anyone has thoughts on individual sections to focus on, for example, the X Division. Thanks in advance. Keep up the great work with the sound off. P.S. It could be the only way that Matt Hardy gets a mention from a national promotion in 2013. Ha ha! That was a good one right there. Yeah, if anybody has any help that they could offer young Matt, you can certainly write into me, and I can pass where. Actually, his email address is lmateo2000@hotmail.com. You can write him directly, or just write into me, post on, in the Facebook thread or whatever, and I'll certainly pass your feedback along to Matt. Your use of the word annual is interesting. I'm not sure if that's a UK or a European thing. I believe what you're referring to is kind of like an annual yearbook type thing. We don't really call it annuals here in this country unless I'm completely off the mark and I'm thinking of something else entirely. But I assume that's what you're talking about. So it's more of a kind of a TNA yearbook, for lack of a better term, that covers, you know, the different wrestlers and all that stuff. So if I'm wrong, let me know. But if anybody has any ideas and opinions they'd like to contribute and what they'd like to see in the 2013 TNA Wrestling Annual, then by all means, let us know. Kirk from Fort Worth, Texas writes in, why did Kane seem to have trouble positioning the tombstone on Undertaker at Bad Blood 97 during the Hell in a Cell match? I don't think it was a problem with him being in the wrong position. I think it was done on purpose because they wanted to show off the immense power of Kane. Here's Kane picking up his brother, a 320-pound man. He wanted to show off. That's why he turned to each different corner of the ring, and then he turned back around, and he dropped him on his head. It was done on purpose. Timothy Billups writes in, what are your thoughts on Chris Jericho going completely personal, it seems. Anyway, I'm not entirely sure of Punk's family history, he says. In their feud, my wife and I both think it's just for ratings. Bleeping out what Punk said on the mic to the Titantron really makes you think he said something, but it's PG and Vince has a tizzy fit when somebody says the word ass. If they really think that Punk loses fans on TV and Miz too, is this stuff with Jericho just for ratings and to pull fans back in? No. The reason it's being done, they felt that this match between Jericho and Punk, it wasn't good enough just to say, oh, you know, we're wrestling to find out who the best wrestler in the world is. We have to add a storyline. We have to add some sort of personal issue to the match, which is not always a bad idea. And I actually think so far, you know, the way Jericho really has done a good job of selling what an evil little prick he is, which is great because if you remember when Jericho first came back, it took weeks and weeks for people to stop cheering him. People just weren't catching on as quickly as I figured they would, that he was being completely disingenuous from the moment he re-debuted on television, and people still wanted to cheer him. And there were people online suggesting, you know, I think that Jericho has reached, you know, Undertaker or Ric Flair territory where people are going to cheer him no matter what. And I always knew that was bullshit. Jericho has this uncanny ability to be such a prick. He can find ways to get people to boo him very, very easily, and he's now reached that point. I don't hear cheers really for Jericho when he comes out. People hate this man, and this is why. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing to add a personal issue to it. I think what you're seeing with more and more people on television using these words that we don't normally hear on PG WWE, using the word, and I'm not just talking about ass, I'm talking about son of a bitch. You know, using, I mean, God, The Rock, when he comes out, he uses every word in the book except the F word, and maybe the S word, and even the S word. We've had people use bullshit, chicken shit, you know, and they bleep it out on TV. The only reason it's being done is because it's WrestleMania season, and because WrestleMania season, they ramp things up, they push the envelope a little bit more. They want to bring some of those people back into the fold who think maybe it's being a little too kid-friendly. But believe me, when WrestleMania is over, you're not going to see these guys on TV dropping S-bombs every week. So you've got one more week. I'm sure we'll get some more potty mouth language on TV this week. One more week to enjoy it before it probably goes away again. And don't forget, Linda McMahon is running for state Senate in the state of Connecticut. I believe things are going to start heating up in that race as well. So if you think that things are going to get edgy you know, for the next 6 months, guess again. This question comes from Josh. I was watching a match from 1992. Actually, I think it was 91, but he says 92. Actually, you know what? It may have aired on Primetime Wrestling in 1992, now that I think about it. Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels. It did air on Primetime, as he said here in his email. I think the match was taped months before. Anyway, Josh wants to know, the announcers mentioned that the title belt that Flair had held was to be distorted on television because of the president of the WWF. I was just curious to find out what title it was. The title in question here, if you watch the video, I believe by this point, Flair was walking around with a spare WWF tag team title belt. Or maybe it was one of the actual title belts they just gave to him when he came out. But it was a WWF tag belt. What happened is, and I explained this, I think I've explained this before, but basically, when Flair left WCW, which was, I think, still NWA at the time, he went to come over to WWF. It was a bad parting of ways with him and Jim Herd in WCW, who was the champion at the time. They basically just stripped him of the belt. Back in the day when titles actually meant something, so this is going back a ways, the champion had to put a deposit down on the actual belt that would be returned once they lost the championship. I believe the deposit was something like $25,000. And Flair had claimed that he was never paid. He was never given his $25,000 back, and therefore the belt was his property. So he called up Vince McMahon and said, "Hey, listen, this is the situation. I've got this belt. Do you want it?" And of course, Vince McMahon said, "I'd love it." And that's when you started seeing Bobby Heenan on television before Flair even debuted, showing off the big gold belt. That was a big deal. When Flair debuted, for weeks and weeks, he was walking around with the big gold belt from WCW. And obviously, I mean, this had the wrestling world a buzz back then. Well, WCW did not take very lightly to that. They claimed it was their property, and whatever they claimed, it went to court, and it was ruled. I don't remember what the exact ruling was, but at the end of the day, WWF either had to or just didn't want to deal with the headaches, the legal ramifications. So that's when they concocted this whole storyline that President Jack Tunney ordered that the belt be distorted on television because it was not the real world title. The only world champion was Hulk Hogan. Ric Flair was claiming, "I'm the real world champion." Jack Tunney said, "No, you're not. That belt has no business. It's not an official WWF title. Every time you show it off on TV, we're going to video distort it." And they would put that blur over the belt. Well, they would put the blur over the belt because they didn't want you to see it was a WWF tag belt. And because the actual big gold belt did have to be returned. Flair must have gotten paid, I'm guessing, and the belt was returned to WCW. They didn't have it anymore, and so that's kind of where that whole storyline came from. So for those of you who did not know, now you do, and you can actually tell. There were some times they didn't quite get the blur in the right place, or Flair would move, and you can tell. I mean, you could just tell it was a WWF belt. It was not the big gold belt. And it must have been weird to the people in the actual arena at ringside who could clearly tell that it wasn't the big gold belt anymore. But it's a hell of a lot better to, you know, have a few people live in the building wonder what the hell is going on as opposed to people looking on television and wondering that same question. So for the people in the building, I'm sure it was awkward, but the people on TV, by and large, couldn't really tell the difference. Alexander writes into the show here. He says, I came up with an idea for the Punk Jericho storyline, and I wanted to hear your thoughts. My idea is that Jericho wins the title at WrestleMania, and then the next night, or any other Raw, they show CM Punk in a bar, staring at a beer in front of him, and then when he grabs the beer, someone appears, maybe Colt Cabana, who is Punk's best friend, and saves Punk from drinking, saying that he can get his title back in a rematch with Jericho, and all of that culminates in a match at Extreme Rules in Chicago. What do you think of that idea? So Punk loses one match, and it turns him into a raging alcoholic. he finally, after all these years of being straight edge and not having a drink, losing one match, you know, makes him contemplate changing his entire lifestyle. I think that's taking it a little too far. But yeah, obviously, if Jericho does win the title, it would almost make more sense for him to win the championship to keep the feud going. And you're right, the next pay-per-view is Extreme Rules in his hometown of Chicago, which is actually, coincidentally, where his DVD is scheduled to cut off. The DVD that they're doing for CM Punk right now is going to chronicle him straight through until Extreme Rules. WWE figured it would culminate at WrestleMania, and Punk's response to that was basically, F WrestleMania, why would it end at WrestleMania? Let's do it in Chicago at Extreme Rules. So it's not all that unlikely to think that Jericho will win the belt and Punk will get a hero's welcome in Chicago as he did at Money in the Bank last year and possibly win the championship back. I think having him in a bar reaching for a beer is not only not going to happen, I don't know that that's necessarily such a fantastic idea. Last question here comes from Ed from a place in Kansas. Love the show, been listening since episode 27. I read on SCScoops that WWE is thinking about announcing main events for WrestleMania 29 on the Raw after this year's show. I think this was neat last year and a good one-time concept, but I have a bad feeling about them doing it again. This year it made sense to do it with John Cena versus The Rock, but I don't see it being a good idea going forward. At some point, it will probably backfire on them. What are your thoughts about this? I agree that, you know, you one time is fine. Actually, more than one time is fine. Not necessarily every year. At some point, your luck is going to run out. Somebody's going to get injured. Something is going to happen. Your main event is going to be ruined. And the reason I don't like this is because there's been talk for some time now that Steve Austin will come back for one more match. CM Punk could be his opponent. It could be Brock Lesnar. It could be somebody else. But CM Punk is the one guy on the current roster that Austin himself has said, listen, if I come back for a match, I would envision myself probably being in the ring with Punk. Punk desperately wants the match. We know that already. And there's absolutely no indication at this point that Austin has agreed to anything with WWE, has agreed to sign anything with respect to next year's WrestleMania. I think with Austin, it's going to come down to maybe 5 or 6 months before the show, if you talk to him and convince him and he wants to do it, you can then start something with him and Punk. Once you know for sure that you've got Austin. Austin is all in and he's going to come back at WrestleMania in New Jersey. But if they have no agreement with Austin and they haven't even discussed it with him, or they have tried to discuss it with him and he says, listen guys, it's way too early, I'm not interested, I'm not committing to anything. So you go, let's say, and make some other main event your second or third choice, and you announce a year in advance, this is our WrestleMania main event, does that ruin the chances that Austin would then want to come back? Because I don't see Austin coming back unless it's the main event. And I don't think he should either. I mean, The Rock came back after 8 years now. This is going to be his first singles match in 8 years against John Cena. It's a big deal. And The Rock has the main event spot. It's in Miami, which is his hometown, but it would be the main event, I think, no matter what. So Steve Austin, who is arguably the biggest wrestling star, certainly one of the biggest wrestling stars of all time, you can argue if he's bigger than The Rock. I mean, for a certain period of time, Austin was. Long term, I think Rock will go down as the bigger star. But Austin was just way up there. And for Austin to come back, his first match, if it happens, in 10 years, and for it to not be the main event, would be a disservice to Austin. And it just wouldn't make any sense. So I don't know about this. I really don't. I've heard those same rumors. It doesn't mean that it's going to happen. It just means that WWE has been in discussions. They have started to discuss the possible main event ideas for WrestleMania next year. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I think it's a horrible idea, because what are we really talking about here? We're talking about long-term booking. I mean, that's the one thing that we complain about all the time, is that WWE has no sense of long-term booking. Plans change hourly. Not just daily, plans change hourly. Vince McMahon can't seem to make up his mind one way or the other. A match is made, a match is taken away a match, another match is made, they have a storyline idea, they drop it, they bring Brodus Clay on as the Funkasaurus, and they take him off TV. I mean, we have so many different examples of this that I can appreciate them wanting to actually take their one big match and book it in advance. It's almost like they're forcing themselves. They're forcing themselves to book long-term by announcing the match so far in advance they can't go back on their word. So long-term booking is good, but you're right. At some point, it's going to come back to bite them on the ass. And I like the idea that Austin might come back for one more match, perhaps against Punk next year. And I just feel like if they're dead set in their ways and they want to announce a main event now and they don't have a commitment from Austin, that could be it. I mean, at that point, how much longer do you wait? Austin's not getting any younger. He's almost 50 years old. So in that respect, I'm not quite sure I like this idea. That's going to do it for this week. Episode 211 in the books. We'll close up the mailbag here. If you have questions, shout-outs, and the like that you want to possibly have right here on the air, there's never a guarantee of anything, but I try. You can email me at thesolemonster@gmail.com, thesolemonster@gmail.com, all one word. Again, not to belabor the point, I normally try not to pit my shit so much, but of all the weeks to do so, I cannot stress enough, if you are not following me on Twitter, if you are not friending me on Facebook, now is the time to go ahead and do that, because WrestleMania is just about upon us, and I will be down in Miami for all the different events, all the festivities, and everything in between, and you will definitely want to follow along with me. I'll be posting photos, maybe some videos, of all different things, from Access, the Hall of Fame, WrestleMania Raw, possibly Wrestle Reunion, everything in between, to give you the full experience in Miami. So on Twitter, it's @Solomonster. On Facebook, you have to friend me on there to get access. It's facebook.com/TheSolomonster, or you can just search for me, and you'll find the official profile. It's a profile page, not a fan page, although there is that too. But it's the official Sound Off logo, so you'll know that it's the official page. Friend me on there. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. The name of the show is Solomonster Sounds Off. Type it in. You can subscribe. Again, for those of you who sometimes have a little bit of a delay, I apologize on behalf of Podbean, which is our host. Sometimes they go down either due to the rush of people who try to download my show, because whenever our page goes down, everyone else's page seems to be working just fine. So sometimes you got to wait a little bit longer. But by and large, when it works, you get the show right away. It's the easiest way to make sure you don't miss a Sound Off. And it's important to subscribe this week, especially because, as I announced earlier, the plan right now is I'm going to record a Sound Off in Miami, most likely on Friday, which is the 30th. Sometime in that afternoon, late afternoon, early evening, I would hope the show will be up. I will be live on location in Miami. I will have WrestleMania predictions, anything that happens during the week, breaking news, thoughts from the Go Home Raw this Monday night, all that stuff will be covered on Sound Off 212, the first Sound Off ever to be recorded on location. And again, who knows, there may be some surprises in store as well. So you'll want to definitely make sure you don't miss that. That's it for episode 211. I want to thank each and every one of you, as always, for supporting the show. This is a big show coming up. I'm looking forward to it. If you're going to be in Miami, enjoy WrestleMania. I will certainly enjoy it as well. I'm really looking forward to it. It should be a fun time. And I always said, you know, if I was going to do WrestleMania, I would want the full experience. And you know, we're doing Access. We're doing the Hall of Fame. We're doing Mania at Sun Life Stadium. Pray that it doesn't rain. And Raw the next night. We know The Rock will be on Raw the next night. Will they announce the WrestleMania main event for next year? We'll find out. But there's going to be a lot going on. I'm looking forward to it. You should be too. If you can't be there, I will try my best to keep you informed of everything that is going on, for better or worse. So definitely follow me on there. Until next time, be well, stay safe. Next time you hear my voice, we'll hopefully be in Miami for Sound Off 212. Until then, be well, stay safe. We'll see you in Miami.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
I am AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sounds Off on SCScoops.com.